The Alaska Spirit of Reading program has no trouble at all getting kids to read. I think it's because of the books they pick. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. It's my pleasure to present our annual book club edition in which the author of a book is put in direct contact with the youthful readers. Our phone number 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. And the book is the graphic novel, Strong Man, on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, Strong Man. It's a fairly short book. I can see where a youthful audience would be able to relate to it. But it's a heck of a story. And the writer, I guess in a way he's the writer, because he wrote it down, but there's an awful lot of tradition incorporated in the story, is Ishmael Hope, who we last had on here as an actor. I guess, Ish, you're still an actor?
Yeah. Theater and storytelling, that's kind of one of my main things.
Yeah. And he joins us from by telephone from Seattle, where he's researching a new theater piece based on the history of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. That's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it'll be tracing kind of the life of William Paul, who was the first Tlingit lawyer in the 20s. And so it's kind of incredible when you think about it during that time. And just a lot of the other many unsung heroes that really, really set the stage for all these powerful Native organizations that we have today, and just it's just this great history that's kind of largely unknown and not really shared and talked about. But I think it's a powerful American story. It's a story that many more people should know about because there's just so much to it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take you back. When did you complete Strong Man?
Well, that was actually a while ago, so it's really nice that actually the Alaska Center for the Book, Jeannie Blackson and Carrie Siegel, really connected to this story. And, you know, as librarians and through the Alaska Center for the Book, felt that it would be something that would connect to young people. And so it was actually first done in 2007, and so it's amazing that it's got this much sort of traction and appreciation, and it's getting a wider audience. So, but yeah, it's just originally an idea that I had when Steve Nelson from the Alaska Association of Alaska School Boards, Alaska ICE, when I was just hanging out with him and Nancy Seamount. You know Nancy really well.
Yeah.
And Steve showed me this comic or kind of a storybook with these amazing drawings by Demi Macheras, who's going to be on the show. And I just thought they're great. And he's about my age. We grew up in similar kinds of environments, Alaskan school environments, and I just had this idea of telling this story that incorporates a traditional strong men story from the Tok-Aneidi clan, Kakwedi, Deshitan, Kanakhtedi, Kanakhadi, and Tsuktineidi clan, and talking to Elizabeth Katas, who was then the clan mother of Tok-Aneidi from Prince of Wales area, and just trying to connect with them, connecting with Elizabeth Katas's family, Chuck and Mary Katas, and saying, hey, I'd like to share this story. And then also connecting with the story told by Frank Johnson, Tok Kwati, and connecting that traditional story to the story of just a high schooler that's struggling, just getting through, you know, a kind of high school like like I was, where I just wanted to make the basketball team and get a date for the prom and, you know, pass the exams and graduate.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of regular anxieties of being a high schooler, I remember that really, you know, it's really present in my life, just those memories.
You're not going to tell me next that you had an uncle who was the coach and wouldn't let you on the team unless your grades got better, are you?
Well, you know, I took some liberties with that part of the story.
Well, that's good. Yeah, so it's strongman, and it's certainly vivid. And I would say also that what comes to my mind is that you're dealing with an oral culture in which, in order to be remembered, the stories are filled with mnemonic devices and filled with triggers for the imagination, and they have to be vivid or nobody, you know, the kids wouldn't absorb them. And in an odd way, through this process of really vividly illustrating, you're kind of bringing that back. It's kind of a returning, really, to a tradition in a sense.
Yeah, well, one thing that I just really believe powerfully as I'm going in the schools that Ginny and Carrie have set up, you know, I've been to Fairbanks, I've been to Sitka, I've been to Kotzebue, and I'm going to spend time in Prince of Wales Island for the last part of the trip. As I've been going around to schools, all I really do is I get up and I validate Native cultural knowledge, traditional knowledge, because I really believe in the achievements of the ancestors. You know, that's not just being personally connected. It's not just because of my race. It's just the fact that we live in Alaska, and if we're intellectually curious and we're looking for different spiritual heritages to explore, that Alaska Native really belongs on the world stage. And so I'm just so proud of that, oral way of communication, because if you really look at it, that oral literature is as powerful, as rich, as deep as anything you'll find in the world. It really is. Any kind of literature, any kind of human expression, and the same goes for the visual arts. And just because there's so much wisdom in there, so much depth and connection to the land, connection to the ancestors, in the actual way of communicating. And so sort of what we've done with the comic book is really just a first step, I think. It's exciting as a comic book, as a just creating this, you know, this fun thing for kids that kids could relate to and connect to. And then hopefully, though, it doesn't just stop there. They don't just say, okay, I know Native culture now because I read this thing or whatever, but they really go on and really want to explore. I would feel actually ashamed if people thought they're only getting Native culture from those kind of avenues.
Oh, yeah.
That I really want people to be connecting to the elders, and that hopefully that's what I'm trying to share, is that the oral form, the oral literature has relevance, has power today, and hopefully this comic book, and when we go out, when Dimi and me go out and talk to schools, that we can reinforce the value of the elders so there's not such a generation gap.
Dimi Mikaris joins us, the illustrator from Kodiak. Dimi, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Great. So you probably echo pretty much what Ish is talking about, but I'm wondering how it impresses you when you go into these schools and all these kids have this enthusiasm, what that does for you.
It's exciting. I feel like when I go into the schools to share my artwork and talk about some of the projects I've worked on, that it's kind of like I'm speaking their language, probably because I approach my artwork from a similar, I'd say, mindset that a lot of these kind of kids have. You know, I mean, my artwork comes from that time of my life where I was young and I was inspired by comic books and cartoons. And I think, you know, sharing artwork like that, especially kind of mixing it with our Alaskan culture and our Alaskan heritage, it, you know, it really captivates them. And I just, you know, I appreciate that I'm able to take part in this really cool project. So,
and it's just the style, just for those that can't see it, and of course this is a radio show, although it does show up on some TV screens, is basically, I call it anime. Do I have that right?
I mean, it's been labeled anime, and I suppose that anime has kind of been so, you know, introduced to our culture here in the United States. It's just kind of like saturated our culture that it's almost blended a little bit with it. So I think a lot of people kind of term it anime, whereas I'm not really approaching it from an anime sense or an anime perspective. There's definitely influences in there, but my ultimate goal, and you know, as an artist, it's, I'm sure Ishmael can relate, it's something that you never kind of achieve. It's always something that you're working towards. My ultimate goal is to kind of develop a style or a term perhaps that would be, you know, based on Alaska. So you wouldn't necessarily associate it with anime or Japanese or comic book necessarily. It could be its own thing. I think that's a really neat opportunity to look at the culture and heritage here in the state, and to kind of blend it with its own unique style of artwork. Does that make sense?
Yes. I guess my first take on it would be, you know, I really like the totems right in the first panel.
Right.
And then you get totem again later on, but holy mackerel, I mean, how could you not have more totems in there, buddy?
Yeah, Ishmael told me that I should probably, like, he's very mindful when it comes to, especially, you know, in his area and his culture and his traditions, that I shouldn't base it on any particular totem pole, that I should create my own. And since, you know, in itself, art, the totem pole work is artwork in and of itself, and I shouldn't copy another artist. So that was sort of my own version or my own take on that.
I'm not sure
how well I executed it. But.
Right. So do I get it right? You're from Chickaloon?
My family is part of the Chickaloon tribe.
Uh-huh.
Some family lives in Chickaloon. I'm from the Matsu Valley, Palmer, and I grew up in Palmer and Anchorage, and I attended the Chickaloon Village Yanida'a Tribal School in my 7th and 8th grade, which my grandma started. My tribal elder, Katie Wade, started that school, and it continues to this day, teaching the culture and the heritage and dancing and language, and I was part of that, and I got to go back and actually work for the village and later in life, and that's when I illustrated the Yanida'a storybooks that Ishmael was talking about earlier that he'd seen.
Yeah, and that was the first. I mean, you're going to go into history books for that, I think.
Well, thank you. I never really thought of it like that, but thank you. It was just fun to work on it and kind of take the opportunity to take these little characters and these stories that grandma would tell us when we were kids and, you know, present them in a way that, you know, in a different kind of way, I suppose.
Yeah. Ishmael, back to you. Ishmael Hope, you were very careful to explain the antecedents of the story that you have in here. Mm-hmm. And the people they went through to get it, the clans and so forth, and who actually did the telling and on like that. But I'm wondering, this is tricky. This to an outsider, this is almost a minefield trying to figure out what can I use, what can I not use, what would be a problem, and so forth. And I understand it's even trickier if you actually are Tlingit, because then, you know, a clan enters into it.
Oh yeah, well, I believe acknowledgement and sharing and knowing and connecting with where these stories come from and who told these stories is absolutely essential. On the other hand, sacred doesn't necessarily equal secret. You know, Robert Bringhurst is one of my mentors, just amazing poet and essayist and translator of the great Haida stories. By Sky and Kundal. And he talked about his favorite poem by the Buddhist poet Lu Welch. And it was just a very short one. It was, "Guard the mysteries, reveal them constantly." And so that's sort of how I ultimately look at it. Guard the mysteries, but always be revealing them. And that's how you guard them. That's how you protect them. Of course, a potential anxiety, a potential challenge you have when things get shared and passed along. even in a healthy oral traditional environment. You know, is my nephew going to tell the story just the way that I told it? And so that's always going to be there. But I think the important thing is just acknowledgement, is doing your homework, is connecting, is really seeing how people, you know, pass on knowledge, how the elders want it passed on, how they want it shared. And I've come to believe that that oral way of communicating, just the way that elders share, and, you know, not just for because you're told to do that or because it's, you know, that's what the elders expect out of you, but because of the value of the way that they share, that I just want to share their words more and more and more. That's what I'm feeling and learning. So I want to transcribe stories in the native language. I want to learn the language. I want to learn Tlingit. I also want to learn Anupiaq. And I want to really go into that thought world, because that's where you connect to the heart. That's where you feel good. That's where you feel connected to the land, connected to the ancestors. And it's just so rich that it's almost as if, you know, we have our own Homer. We have our own Sophocles. We have our own Shakespeare. It's in our elders.
And the story is living. I mean, you're making it, you're keeping life in it. The story needs to always have life in it.
Yeah, and so it's just figuring out there's always a sort of challenge between when something goes between an oral world and then a literate world, a written world. And so we got to, you know, use the written word as a tool for sure, because it's there, you know. It's in many ways unavoidable, but also really try to keep the oral world as healthy, as respected, as with as much integrity, you know, as possible.
Okay, well, there's classrooms and school libraries all over the state that people are tuned in and listening, and the telephone number to join the program is 1-800-478-8255. It'd be great to hear from some of these youngsters and their impressions of the work of these two artists that we're speaking with, Ishmael Hope and Dimi Makaris. And so the invitation's out there. If you're calling from Anchorage, the phone number is 550-8422. I will have to say that many of these schools that are in this Spirit of Reading program are really kind of all over the state, and a lot of rural ones and in the smaller communities. So that's pretty thrilling and exciting to me to make that connection. Okay, you guys, it's time to synopsize the story. I guess this is a little tricky, but somebody needs to, like, kind of explain what the story actually is. Otherwise, people that haven't read it have no idea.
Well, it's about two young men that are similar. Two young men that are going through similar struggles, one in traditional times and one in modern times. And symbolically, they share the same struggles, symbolically, metaphorically. And one of them is a story that I created where there's a high schooler who he's just trying to make the basketball team. He's just trying to pass tests. He's just trying to get a date for the prom. He's got the regular anxieties of a high schooler, just as I experienced and as many people experienced. And he's faced with a test, a strong, powerful test that he has to meet and match in order to really become an adult, to really grow up. And so he goes through those stages, and in the end, he meets the test, and he, you know, he ends up, you know, after that wanting to learn more about his cultural traditions. And so the traditional story is just a popular story that's told around Tlingit that's owned by clans that's largely identified with Prince of Wales Island. And it's a story that is just a powerful one about a young man who is very humble, very quiet, but secretly trains for strength until the embodiment of strength comes to see him. And then he goes on to the sea lion rock to meet a new Kakau, the man on the fort, the giant sea lion. He doesn't reveal his strength until the end, and until his people truly need him. And so they have a proverb that Frank Johnson talked about, where he was in the back of the boat as they're going to Sea Lion Rock, and they called it he just went as if he was the bailer. And that's the idea. That's that Tlingit traditional value of someone who is not showing off, or is not, talking too loudly, is remaining humble, but has inner strength and has been training themselves with strength. And he reveals it at the end when his people need it.
Yeah. And so the one in high school has to carry the water for the team.
Yeah, he's the water boy.
He's
so
the water
that's
boy.
That's a parallel.
Yeah.
So the bailer, the water bailer, and then the water boy.
Well, okay. So the Sitka classroom has come through with this. Probably kids with Ginny there at the library in Sitka, and I think we'll bring them on right now. You're on the air, Ashlyn. With Dimi and Ish.
Okay.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Well, you're welcome to ask any question you'd like of these two, either one or both. Just say which.
Okay. Well, our first question was, if you were to do another comic book, what story would it be?
Yeah, guys.
this I think Dimi's done. He's the storyteller. He's the writer.
And Dimi's done a couple other projects, like the Native American Tales, I think. I don't know if you guys have
Trickster.
Read those. Trickster Tales. Yeah, Trickster Tales. That's great.
So
but
we probably should ask this of Dimi.
What, the question?
Yeah. What have you got on your plate? I know you're also involved in that Denali thing you illustrated for that, I think.
Yeah, that's it was just a project that I completed for the Anchorage Museum. It was a translation they had from an Athabascan legend that kind of detailed the creation of Denali, the mountain, and they asked if I could illustrate that into like 20 pictures or, you know, and it's on display now at the Anchorage Museum. But I'm kind of open for different stories. I'm only kind of familiar with the stories that my grandma told, and there's a few that I haven't illustrated yet. So if it was my choice, it would probably be one of those stories. But I really enjoyed working on Strongman with Ishmael because, A, it was the first time I really got to work on a comic book, which is my dream. This is what I want to do for a living, is make comic books. And second off, it was that Ishmael had a particular story in mind. He had, you know, a vision of what he wanted to see in the story, and I really found that it was a lot of fun working with somebody on a project that kind of had the same drive and the same motivation as I did to match me creatively. So, if we were to work on a project together, I would leave it up to Ishmael for sure.
Okay, and it sounds like you might be open to other cultures and other peoples. It could be Nupiaq, or it could be
absolutely.
Yeah, it could be other Athabascan. It could be out in the Yupik or Lutik or Aleut.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it's a wide range of cultures.
It would be awesome to. It's great that it has such a positive effect. This Strongman comic book. It would be so wonderful to be doing more. A lot of times it really has to do with, whether you get that grant or whether you have the support from the organization. It just happened to be Steve Nelson was ready and willing and excited about working on it, and Sally Rue at Alaska Ice was really supportive and excited, and they had Chamai Publishing in Anchorage that they had a relationship with. They had connections to the distribution of the bookstores around the state, And so there's just all those organizational things it was so wonderful to have it before. And hopefully, if we get it, people listening today, they're interested in something like that. Yeah, we'd like to do more projects with integrity and connecting to Native culture and connecting to young people. And also pointing the way forward with trying to tell a modern story, but also definitely pointing the way to the elders, to the tradition bearers, many alive today and many have gone on, and hopefully just saying, here, you're interested in this, and now look to those elders as well.
Ashlyn, great question. You got another one there?
No, I think that was it.
All right. Anybody else there with you there in the classroom in Sitka? Who wants to join in here?
I'll see.
I love this part. Somebody come walking down the classroom from the back. Oh, go away.
Hello?
Hi. What's your name?
Hi. This is another student from Blatchley Middle School, and I was asking you, Mr. Dimmy, and what you're going to be talking to us about when you're here visiting us in art.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll be down there in a couple days, and I've put together a little presentation that shows some of the various projects I've worked on and just some of the fun kind of artwork that I do in my spare time. And I've kind of geared it towards sharing with students how I approach my artwork, some of my different influences, and I like to offer suggestions how to get better at artwork and, you know, answer questions about artwork in general, and if anybody wants to participate or, you know, has anything in mind, I'm more than open to it. So it'll be kind of more just like an open discussion where I'm sharing my artwork, and all along the way you can have questions and participate however you like.
Cool. Well, goodbye then.
Okay, well, I'll see you soon.
Thank
okay,
you.
Bye.
Over. Anybody else there in the classroom? No, no. They
no,
say goodbye.
That question.
Yeah. What? So, who did the storyboarding on this?
I did. Ishmael kind of provided me, which was a big help with, you know, ideas for layouts of the pages, how much story would be contained on each page. And these are the kind of things that when you open a comic book for the first time and skim through it, you're not necessarily thinking about. You're just kind of like taking in a story. But when I learned very quickly when approaching actually creating comic books, it takes so much forethought to determine how much story will be revealed on each page, or, you know, the main imagery that you're gonna portray on each page. And it was a big help, like I said, having Ishmael to work with on that.
Yeah, you know, I got the feeling, you know, I think it fits very well to the number of pages that you have, but it's a little tight, you know. I guess if you had to put another piece of paper in there, that would be what, four more pages. So that might
exactly.
be a little bit too much. Yeah, but especially when I open it up, you know, I kind of want it to be like Marvel Comics or something, or DC,
yeah.
you know, where I have that one spectacular title page, right? And then maybe one panel for the to get the story started.
Well, it'd be really cool. Yeah, it'd be really cool to do something like a graphic novel, an actual graphic novel where it's like 64 pages or something like that. But, you know, then it's doing those projects takes a lot of organizing and time. So hopefully that's down the road.
So did you guys correspond back and forth in person, by computer, phone? How did that work out, and how long did it take you?
We communicated by email mostly, I think, right?
Yeah. It was just originally I did a thumbnail sketch. That took a long time, not the actual sitting down and writing, but to think it out and to really be confident in it. And then just sent it to Dimmy, sent those pages to him, and he did his wonderful magic with it. But then, you know, he'd have questions because they were really rough thumbnail sketches. He'd have questions, and we just go back and forth on that on email, and it ended up spectacularly.
So were you acquainted with Prince of Wales Island at all, Dimmy?
No, not at all. I've never even been down to that part of the state before.
Oh, boy. Well, I think you did fairly well on the, you know, getting the mood of it. But what do I know? I've only just flown over it.
Really? Yeah, no, photo reference, man. That's, you know, I always suggest that when I'm talking about artwork, too, is that you can never have enough photo reference, whether it be, you know, scenery or animals or, you know, the clothing. There can never be enough reference, so.
The last page, you basically, everything has to be wrapped up. And so you have these little boxes with a little... the rest of the story in them, basically. did you guys work that out together, or how was that? I mean, they're really—it's quite funny.
Well, I kind of, with those thumbnail sketches, it kind of gave them a rough idea of how big panels and what the text in the panels and what the characters in the panels would be. But again, it was just really rough, so Demi had to use his, you know, a huge amount of creativity in order to really make the final, you know, make those decisions and how things would look.
Well, we're speaking to the author of Strongman, Ishmael Hope, and the illustrator, Demi McCarris, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state governments since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com. And by Providence Imaging Center, with three locations, including its newest center in Soldotna, offering CT scans, MRI, and digital X-rays to residents on the Kenai Peninsula. Learn more at provimaging.com.
It's the annual Spirit of Reading program, a book club, concentrating on juvenile, mostly fiction, but not necessarily. And we're speaking with the authors, both Alaskans, for this year's selection for school libraries across the state. Strongman, a Tlingit story. We've got Ishmael Hope and Demi McCarris with us. And we're open for your questions from wherever you're calling, at school or a classroom or a library, at 1-800-478-8255 statewide, or in Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And Demi, a question for you from Julian, who has emailed from Sitka and says, I'm in art class in Sitka, and I'm wondering where you learned to do such good art.
Oh, that's nice. Where did I learn how to do it? I just, honestly, it come from watching a lot of cartoons and reading a lot of comic books. I really pretty much just owe all my artwork to that. It's a lot of practice, of course. You have to do it, you know, every day. It's almost like an obsession. It's not, I don't think it's something that people are just naturally gifted at drawing. I think people are just naturally gifted at being almost, you know, obsessive with a particular skill or a particular hobby, whether it be sports or artwork or music, you know. Mine just happened to be drawing, and it's something that I do every day and I enjoy doing. So the quicker that an aspiring artist learns to enjoy the actual, you know, sitting down and working on paper constantly, the better they'll get. And yeah. I don't know, just tips and suggestions would be don't be afraid to copy from comics. And when I say copy, I don't mean, you know, literally trace, you know, out of comics, but to actually just look at a picture and try to draw it. You might think it's cheating, but if you're doing it to practice, you'll be surprised how quickly you can learn different techniques and different methods to improve your artwork.
You know, it's hard to find those lines. I mean, that's what I find in that style. You got to be kind of bold because you're going to ink that line on there, and you're just going to have to do it. So you sort of got to know what your pen or whatever you're using is going to do.
Right, exactly. I mean, yeah, be comfortable with your tools, and you know, I just use a pencil and ink, and then the rest of it I do on the computer. I don't do any coloring, you know, right on the page or anything like that. But you know, mainly just start with pencil. That's what I would suggest, is just get comfortable with pencil first, and then if you want to move on to ink, then you know, study how different people use inks, brushes, you know, pen markers, you know, any all sorts of different types of things.
Yeah, well, go
ahead.
Yeah, I'll just add, it seems, I spent years actually, you know, middle school and high school drawing and being obsessed with comic books. That's why I wanted to do this this project.
Ah, the truth comes out.
It seemed like people get, though, when they're young and they want to be a comic book artist or other kind of artist, they get obsessed, as I did, with materials, like what kind of sable brush or what kind of specific kind of ink, Higgins Black Magic, and what kind of quill and what kind of pencil and what kind of eraser, but really, and also technique, you know, what kind of particular style should I do? But really, the big thing is just what Dimmy talked about.
Yeah.
A lot of time just really liking it, focusing on it, practicing it. And I think it was Malcolm Gladwell that wrote about the 10,000-hour rule. If you do something for 10,000 hours, you usually get pretty good at it. Those are a lot of hours, so you might as well really like doing it.
Yeah, and for comic books, I've heard also that if you're really serious about making comics, you won't actually be a comic book artist. I mean, this is just kind of a rule of thumb. Until you hit about 400 pages of actual comic book storytelling, and it seems like a lot. And if there was one thing I would advise for people that were getting into comics, something that I wish I could go back and do over would be practice telling stories. I spent my whole life practicing drawing pictures, and looking back on it, I would be so much further now if I would have spent more time trying to tell stories instead of just trying to illustrate pictures. Does that make sense?
That makes one hell of a lot of sense.
Okay.
And that's where spending time with the elders, listening to the stories, or reading stories like Catherine Atla, Paul John, the stories of Usset Chuck, the stories of Willie Marks, the stories of Elizabeth Nyman, and the stories of Skye and Gundel, translated by Robert Bringhurst. That's where, you know, using that to really build your imagination, that helps you do that.
Wow. And, you know, I want to throw in this, too, about hanging out with the grandparents or uncles or other people's elders. It's something you invest time in, just like you would practice daily to make your art. It's something that you invest time in because it's through a prolonged period of time that interactions develop where the elder actually knows when you're receptive and they can better start communicating with you.
Well, yeah, there's nothing like it in the world to spend time with older people who just want to give and want to tell stories, whether they're mythological or whether they're just kind of good stories about their life. There's really, really nothing like it, and you got to actually learn how to do that. You know, you're right, Steve. You got to learn how to just sit down and interact with them. So that takes some time, but then once you get there, get in that comfort zone. There's really nothing like it. It just totally feeds the soul.
This one also coming to you, Ish, from David Sam, who says, "Congrats on the comic. Were you able to talk with your dad of this comic, and what was his take?"
Oh, boy, yeah. My dad was Andrew Hope III, Ha Stunch, from the Siknachadi. And, yeah, boy, he was a Native educator, and it was really my dad and my mom, Elizabeth Hope, Sister Goodwin, that they really gave me the pride and the appreciation of Native culture. And I took it for granted a lot, you know, growing up. But thankfully it stuck and it stayed. And so, yeah, my dad was actually alive. He passed away in 2008, and he was real proud of the comic book. So it was just really, it was a good connection with my dad to make him proud. It was really one of the most important things to me about this whole project.
Who's banging their phone there? Somebody's banging their phone.
I don't know what that noise is.
It's coming from the Ish side of things over there. And
maybe it's from my cord. It's doing this creaky sound. Sorry.
Yeah, could be. Could be. Okay, it's Brett joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Hi.
I'm not sure if this is a question or an idea. I had a great experience with the Alaska Board Association of ICE that you mentioned earlier. A couple of years back, did a workshop and met Seema Hamilton and Trey Jorsey and was introduced to the modern oral tradition of spoken word, and just wondered if you guys had ever made connections in that way or thought of that route.
Spoken word like poetry?
Right.
Yeah, I actually write poetry as part of, you know, just some of the things I do and share poetry, and I like the spoken word style that people
that people do too. And you know, I'm very supportive. There's in Juneau, there's two people that really do a lot with spoken word. That's and they do a poetry reading, and that'd be Christy Nami Erickson and Nahan, and it was a young Tlingit man. And yeah, that's great. I'm very supportive, but I haven't done an incredible amount with it. But yeah, that's a great avenue as well.
Yeah, hey Brett.
Thank you so much.
All right, Brett, thank you. And yeah, I'm glad you threw that one in there because yeah, I think it is very much related. This one comes from Jody, third grade, Weller Elementary. We love their comic format for sharing Alaska Native storytelling to a new generation of children. That from Jody at Weller Elementary, coming in by email. Here's Ashlyn at Blatchley in Sitka. I would just like to thank Mr. Hope for coming to our school and talking about your comic, Strongman. It was great reading your comic, but it was even better hearing you talk about it in person. I hope that you can visit our school again sometime, and thank you again. Yeah. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking to the creators of Strongman, a Tlingit story. Ishmael Hope, who did the writing and kind of cultivating the story and getting permission and so forth. And Demi McCarris, who provided the illustrations and practices every day, as he's been telling us. this one from Leif Van Cease says, "Dear Mr. Hope, what has been your favorite so far in the spirit, your favorite visited so far?" So in other words, the school you went to, you're supposed to you're supposed to play favorites.
What's my favorite school?
Good luck on that question.
Well, they've really all been fantastic. They really have. Sitka was, boy, since Ginny and Carrie lived there, oh my, they really made me work hard. I was like talking for 90% of the day, which is exhausting. But it was wonderful. I was so glad that they allowed me to connect really to just the whole school district. That was so wonderful. And Kotzebue was fantastic as well. I'd say the thing I really enjoy the most is connecting with young people. And although it's also great to talk with educators about how to connect with young people and talk to universities as well. But yeah, my favorites were probably going into any of the K-12 schools.
The telephone number to make that connection is 1-800-478-8255 statewide, a local call in Anchorage of 550-8422, and tons of emails now piling in at talk@alaskapublic.org. This one for Demi from Quinlan in Sitka. "Dear Demi, what is your favorite form of art?"
Definitely comic books.
Ah, why am I not surprised?
Yeah, comic books of all shapes and sizes. You know, there's serious ones and funny ones. And, you know, I tend to gravitate towards kind of like superhero comic books. But I just think it's one of the coolest forms of art to be able to pick up a little book and look at pictures and intake a story kind of at the same time.
Did you, where did you pick up your technique? Did you go to school for it, get training, have a mentor, all of the above? How'd that work?
No, not really. It was really just, I can remember early on, I've always been drawing as long as I can remember, just kind of doodling, sketching. And I remember when I was younger, my stepbrother would come over on the weekends and we would draw together. And I remember that was one of the funnest things I can remember as being a kid, was that he was a little older than me and he could draw better than I could. And we would practice drawing these little scenes together. And he kind of had an idea of how to draw in perspective, which always really, you know, being super young, like first grade, I could just, it really kind of inspired me to see words and bricks in 3D. And then later on, you know, just continuing on, watching cartoons and eventually getting into comic books, I kind of found the same sort of inspiration and same sort of excitement going to pick up new comic books every week and studying the artwork and kind of trying to mimic and try out those different styles.
Yeah, you know, you obviously are really enjoying, like, the lighting, I notice. And the other thing is you're getting pretty good with foreshortening, which, you know, takes a while.
Yeah,
Steve, you must be a visual artist, Steve.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so that's that's great.
Yeah, but I mean, how you place your lighting, I think, especially in this form, this art form, is really critical.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You know, because you get where you can get your highlights and what kind of form it brings out and all that sort of thing. And it seems like you do a lot of thought about that, and also Dimmy and the just the tones, the kind of colors. You needed to like distinguish when you were in one story or the other story, and going
right.
back and forth between. So you had to kind of develop a somewhat different palette for each of them, but they do cross over a bit, and that's why I really enjoy, I think, the most of the whole thing.
Nice, I appreciate it. It's been such a long time since I've worked on that project. I feel that, you know, I've learned so much since then, and kind of talking about this project is almost sort of like stepping back in time
right.
and talking about things that, you know, I would probably approach a little bit differently now, or, you know, so many things that I've learned since then. It's just like I said, that was so exciting that was my first actual comic book project that I got to work on. And ever since then, you know, I've been working more and more on my storytelling and all those techniques that you described. And I'm kind of learning new and different ways to incorporate them in telling stories.
Well, that's one scary looking sea lion you got on the front.
I love the scary and ugly stuff. I don't know. I just gravitate towards that kind of horrific things.
This one from Alex and Sitka for Ishmael. Mr. Hope, would you come back down and talk about your second book? If you or are making a second book. So it seems like you're into a play at the moment, though.
Well, right now I'm working on a play. Actually, I do have a book of poetry coming out pretty soon, but that's probably more, you know. But yeah, I'd love to do more comic books. That'd be a lot of fun, and probably something either Athabaskan or Anupak. And as soon as we get that done, I'll fly right to the schools.
Yeah. Well, I know that ICE out of the AASB. Definitely has very limited budget, so they can't really bankroll a whole series, I don't think. they might be able to help the launch, but then after that, you guys got to find some way of making it work.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully there are people who are excited about this kind of thing and really believe in it.
No, I think there's a lot of young ones that are definitely excited as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
And Ginny Blackson joins us from Bletchley Middle School in Sitka, kind of the godmother of the connecting the Alaska spirit of reading with Talk of Alaska. Ginny, I will always be thankful to you, and I'm so glad you joined us on the program.
Well, thank you, Steve, and I wanted to thank Ishmael and Damie. We have had them work pretty hard, but this is our fifth year of the Spirit of Reading, and it's our first time having Alaska authors, and I think that's so important for kids to see themselves and to know that anyone can grow up to be an author or an illustrator if they just want to. We still have Damie's coming to Sitka this week, and then Ishmael is going to Prince of Wales in May. And I just wanted to let you know that we have started planning for next year, and it's looking like we're going to be featuring a Canadian author named Roxana Khan, who wrote a fabulous book called Wanting More about an orphan in Afghanistan. And then she's also written a whole collection of children's multicultural books. And we're hoping that we're going to be partnering with librarians in Barrow next year for part of the program.
Oh, wow. That's great. And this is like U-School librarians, essentially, you don't get You don't really get paid for this program, do you? I mean, this is kind of like...
We don't. We write a grant every year, and we have been fortunate to be funded by the Alaska State Library and the National Institute of Archives and Museums and the Alaska Association of School Librarians. And so everyone pitches in, and then each site that the author or illustrator visits kicks in a little bit towards their expenses. But we've been lucky to get a grant that covers all the travel, and as you know, that is the most expensive part of bringing an author.
Well, and especially, so I mean, because you get so many of these rural schools, and I'm sure all of them would really like to have an author visit, but that's not going to be possible. But you do get manage to get a bunch of them in there.
Mm-hmm. We have. We've had authors go to Bethel and to Bristol Bay, and we do video conferencing. Ishmael did a video conference when he was here, and so we try really hard to get as much of the state covered. We've been to the Matsu and Anchorage, Juneau, and Ketchikan, and so we've tried to get around the state quite a bit. But yeah, this is all a volunteer effort. And if there are other teachers and librarians out there looking to get involved, this is my last year coordinating the program, so I'm looking for a replacement.
Jenny, and I need their email, whoever they are, too.
Okay. But thank you so much, Steve, for having us every year.
Oh, I've always wanted to do a book club, and I never can get the listeners to read the book, you know. So.
Strongman is a fabulous comic book, and I also want to really put a pitch in for Trickster, because besides Dame's wonderful illustrations, there's a John Active Raven story in there,
mm-hmm.
And I'm old enough to remember when John Active was on the radio a lot.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed his stories, and there's an illustration of one of John's Raven stories that's just fabulous. So thank you for having me on, Steve.
All right, Jenny. Yeah, thanks for your call. I'll go to you, Chelsea, in a second here, but first I pass this on from Aaron to our two guests. Hi, I'm enjoying the program and look forward to checking out the book. I've also recently enjoyed reading The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, about a boy mm-hmm. growing up on the Spokane Indian Reservation. The boy is a budding cartoonist who expresses himself through his drawing. It is a great novel with several awesome drawings. That from Aaron in Anchorage.
Well,
let's go to Chelsea now in Juneau. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Chelsea.
Hi, thank you. I took a class out at UAS in Tlingit, and that was really great, and we talked about Strongman, actually. I was wondering if you guys could both just talk a little bit about getting permission to tell stories, and if you had any opposition at first from elders about how you were telling the story and the mediums that you used.
Yeah, well, I will say that Ish did go into that somewhat very carefully at the beginning, but yeah, let's get a little brief reprise here, especially as whether you've gotten any flack for it or whether there was some resistance to start with and like that, Ish.
Well, it's always important to know where things come from and to acknowledge the tradition bearer where it came from. That's always the key thing to do. And different clans maybe have different ways of giving permission or sometimes permission's not required. Sometimes it's more you acknowledge where you got it from. But always go to elders, tradition bearers, always ask how they want their work to be shared. And while I also believe, though, that is this belongs to everybody. This belongs to us. This is our Alaskan heritage. It's our Alaskan history, all of us. And it's so important. It's maybe some of the material is sensitive, but most of it should be freely shared, published and well translated. It needs to be out there. Kids need to know their spiritual and intellectual heritage.
Well said. Do you want to add anything to that, Dimmy?
I just kind of followed, Ishmael's lead on that one for sure. And then with the stories that I did with my grandma, I was, definitely mindful to keep her involved as I was illustrating and with the characters and with the designs. And she approved on pretty much all of them and had nothing but good things to say. But it's definitely something that you want to take into account. And I think participation from, you know, the elders as well as the youth and kind of bridging that gap is like one of the most important things and one of the most really, potentially awesome opportunities with comic books, like we're talking about here, is that it does bridge that gap from, you know, taking a young kid's interests and an elder's, you know, wisdom and combining those two things.
Yeah, I really have to say that I really wish that I had spent more time getting stories from my grandpa. I mean, I spent time with him, but I didn't like actively go and seek the stories. And so I kind of get them through my mother, really. But, you know, she used to always encourage me, say, look, here's a man. He grew up dirt poor. His dad fought in the Civil War. He was there in the last century before there was anything. There were no automobiles. There were no airplanes. He saw all that come. You know, this man has such a story. And of course, oh, yeah, well, but he's still old grandpa. You know?
Yeah.
That was a long time ago, and now I got my regrets. Let's go to Donna, joins the program from Klawak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Donna.
Hi to Ishmael and Demi. I just really wanted to congratulate you on such a great project, talking about Death Proof and relating it to a modern day to help our younger ones. And Ishmael, I want to encourage you. I see you got through a lot of barriers to keep this story alive for many generations. I hope that you could come to Klawak and tell the story of our 21 totem poles here one day.
Gunnus Cheesh. Yeah, it's just that's where the story comes out of, and connecting with Elizabeth Katass from the talk on AD, and just connecting on that story and learning from the elders, learning what Richard Nora Downhower did with Frank Johnson's story in Hoshuka, with a story, and hearing other elders share the story, such as Murray Olson and a young man, Lyle James, who tells the story, Nels Lawson, and George Ramos. Those are the people I've heard the story from, and all the different ways of telling it really inform me. And so that's what came out of the comic book, and maybe there are other different versions, other different ways of looking at it. But I really, really tried to go to the tradition bearers, go to the Elizabeth Katass and her family, and being able to share it.
Donna from Klawak, that was a great way to end the show, and thank you so much for your call. And Demi, I guess people can see your stuff at the museum right now.
Yep.
Thanks for being with us.
Steve Hyman. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.